We have two more lectures to finish this chapter I'm about to start, so we have plenty of time compared to my other section because they had one fewer day. So I will not get too deeply into this. I want to explain this first slide, though. We just got done in the previous chapter studying one of the major functions of DNA, which is replication. Now we're going to take a look at the other major function of DNA, which is transcription. But before we get to that particular, those particulars, let me explain this experiment and what it was trying to accomplish. So we're back to the days where we have already demonstrated, based on the experiments I talked about already, that not only is there a genetic material, but it specifically is DNA. And we've already learned, we already discussed the structure of DNA, but a basic question back at this time is, how does DNA work? Yes, it's important to know that DNA is the stuff that does work for inheritance, but how does that happen? Well, the scientists that created this experiment formulated a hypothesis that was called the one gene, one enzyme hypothesis. So what they were trying to test, what they put forth, was that a gene, which is a sequence of DNA nucleotides, operates by corresponding to an enzyme. Each gene, in other words, if this hypothesis is correct, each gene tells the cell how to make an enzyme. That's why they called it the one gene, one enzyme hypothesis. And this is pretty reasonable to formulate as a hypothesis simply because enzymes are so important to biology, right? Each of the thousands of different chemical reactions that occur needs its own kind of enzyme. And so they were reasonable to expect genes to tell the cell how to build enzymes. They're important things. I'm not going to get too bogged down in how they accomplished this, but they caused mutations in mold. They were using mold as their organism. And they caused random mutations by irradiating them with ultraviolet. Now, they were causing mutations, but it was impossible to cause mutations where they wanted to. They were just randomly causing mutations and seeing what would happen. But they studied a particular biochemical pathway. And you're already familiar with the fact that a pathway starts with a molecule, the original reactant, called a precursor. It gets converted into something else, which then gets converted into something else for however many steps, and then eventually you have the final end product. So you have precursor going to ornithine, citrulline, and then arginine in this pathway, if the pathway runs normally. And each of those steps, you already know, involves its own enzyme. To get from one step to the next, you have to have an enzyme working. And this is why they were causing these mutations, to see whether mutations would cause enzymes to lose their function. By damaging the DNA, if DNA does indeed, genes, if it does indeed correspond to enzymes, then damaging the DNA should make the enzyme not work. That was their rationale. And the reason they used a pathway is because in a pathway, if you shut down an enzyme somewhere in the pathway, you can't get past that point. So some of their randomly mutated organisms could get up to only a certain point in the pathway and they couldn't get any farther. But all they had to do was supplement, just give them the stuff that is next in the pathway, rather than having them make their own, which they can't because they can't get past that enzyme. They would just give it to it instead and it could do the rest of the pathway. So it seemed that they were correct, meaning that it seems that genes correspond to enzymes. But it turns out that the one gene, one enzyme hypothesis isn't quite true. And that's because not every protein acts as an enzyme. Proteins are important for a whole bunch of other reasons, too, that we discussed, right? So, eventually they reformulated the hypothesis as the one gene, one protein hypothesis, meaning each gene corresponds to a protein. Well, that turns out being incorrect as well, because some proteins are multimeric, remember, right? The ones that have quaternary structure are actually more than one polypeptide big. Well, making one polypeptide requires its own set of instructions. So the next iteration of the hypothesis was changed to one gene, one polypeptide, because these multimeric proteins actually require more than one gene. Each polypeptide requires its own gene to tell the cell how to build that. Like hemoglobin, for instance, requires two genes. There's four overall polypeptides, but there's two identical of each, and each one requires its own gene. Well, even stating it as one gene, one polypeptide is wrong for a couple reasons, actually. Even though they stopped renaming it eventually, but even one gene, one polypeptide is wrong for two major reasons. One is that not every gene, as it turns out, has anything to do with building a protein. Most genes do. We've talked already about the fact that genes indirectly give us, or any organism, its traits, because genes tell the cell how to build messenger RNA. DNA's job is done. That's transcription, producing that messenger RNA. And then the messenger RNA now has a code that tells the cell how to build a polypeptide. And it's the proteins, the polypeptides, that actually give the organism its traits. Okay? So that's how genes influence traits. But not every gene is an instruction for how to build messenger RNA. Only genes that are called protein-coding genes are instructions for how to build messenger RNA. And once that's built, then messenger RNA goes on to the process of translation to actually produce the polypeptides. There's still other genes, though, that are called non-protein-coding genes. And this is why the one gene, one polypeptide hypothesis is wrong. These other genes, these non-protein coding genes, are still transcribed. For a protein coding gene, transcription results in a messenger RNA being built. For a non-protein coding gene, transcription produces RNA, but not messenger RNA. There's all kinds of different RNA. Messenger RNA is just one type. We'll talk about several, but there's even a lot more than that. Well, just like a cell doesn't know how to build messenger RNA unless DNA tells it how to, a cell can't build any other kind of RNA unless it's told how to do so. So these other kinds of RNA that have to be built also need instruction manuals for how to build them, and those are what the non-protein coding genes are for. They're transcribed to produce other kinds of RNA, which then don't go on to translation to build proteins. They are the final product is that RNA doing its job as whatever kind of RNA it is. You see the difference there? So that's one reason why one gene, one polypeptide is wrong, because not every gene corresponds to a polypeptide. And another reason that I'll explain later, and once we get deeper into the chapter, is that in eukaryotes, it's possible for a single gene to actually code for multiple different kinds of polypeptides. Now, I'm not going to tell you how that happens yet, but that's another reason why one gene, one polypeptide is wrong. But even though all of those differently named hypotheses are wrong, it still is important to understand that for protein coding genes, there is a correspondence between genes and proteins, because proteins cannot be built by any cell unless the cell is specifically told how to do that. And that requires DNA as the original code carrier, which then relays that information to messenger RNA, and now that serves as the direct code for a ribosome to read that messenger RNA and build a polypeptide, to, and now you have the protein. That's what the rest of the chapter is about, really. That's gene expression. Gene expression is the process of reading a gene, transcribing it into messenger RNA, and then reading that messenger RNA to build a sequence of amino acids called a polypeptide. But only one of that part of that process is DNA directly involved in. Transcription, in other words, is just part of overall gene expression. But that's what we're looking at next time.